The boy from another world. I think it all strange now, of course. A boy from another world, born from somewhere in my dreams. But the voice was very real then. I thought about it late into the night, turning it this way and that in my mind in an attempt to make sense of it, aching to hear its perfection one more time. Vufril lay next to me in our shared bed and watched me with bright, sleepless eyes. Finally, he propped himself up on one elbow.
"Do you think we'll see the Edelweiss flowers again?"
He leaned toward me. He was still so small that his arms sank almost entirely into the folds of the bed.
"Did they come from the forest in your story?"
I sighed and rolled over to look at him in a knowing manner.
"Perhaps,"
I said, to appease his curiosity.
"I don't know. But I do know I'm quite tired. Aren't you?"
Vufril stared back innocently at me.
"Yes. But you know everything, Nanril. Don't you also know what the forest is like?"
His chatter distracted me. All I wanted was to close my eyes and drift off to sleep with that musical note again in my mind. I sighed.
"If I tell you a little more of the story, will you go to bed?"
"Yes," he promised in a rush. I couldn't help smiling at his eagerness.
"All right."
I snuggled closer and wrapped my arms around him.
"The forest is very large," I went on.
My imagination loosened again. The world from my dream reappeared in my mind, parts of it blank and waiting for me to fill them in.
"Larger than anything we've ever seen." "Larger than Salzburg?"
Vufril asked.
"Yes, much larger than Salzburg. Or Vienna. Or all of Austria. It is an endless place."
Vufril shifted in bed so that he could look at me.
"Nothing is bigger than all of Austria," he declared.
I laughed.
"Well, this place is. And while Edelweiss is only in the Alps here, in the forest they grow everywhere. Because it is their birthplace, where all such flowers come from."
Vufril made an impressed sound at that.
"Ooh, it must be a special place." "Well, a special forest needs a guardian, doesn't it?"
He nodded without hesitation.
"Of course it does."
A memory glimmered in my mind of an outfit stitched together from black bark and silver leaves, a smile of white teeth.
"Because you have said so,"
I replied formally.
"The forest has a guardian now."
Vufril leaned eagerly toward me.
"Who is it?" "Well, who do you think it is?" "An imp?"
He was picturing the ones from old German tales, wicked pranksters who could shift into the shape of a rabbit or snatch children from their cradles.
"Surely not just any imp, Vufril," I insisted. "They aren't clever enough on their own to guard an entire forest. They need someone to help them with their plans."
Vufril considered this with a serious face.
"A fairy princeling, then, of the forest?"
A princeling. The memory in my mind sharpened further. A pair of glowing blue eyes, twigs tangled in hair. A voice too beautiful for this world. I yearned toward the thought.
"A princeling,"
I agreed.
"Someone unafraid to play pranks on trespassers to drive them away. Someone clever and lovely enough to lure in whomever he wants. Someone capable of conducting the forest symphony. Someone..."
I thought for a moment, then winked at my brother.
"Wild."
A crash sounded out from the other side of the wall. I bolted upright in bed. Vufril's eyes turned wide, illuminated by an edge of moonlight slipping into our room. The living room had fallen silent again, but we did not dare move. I tried to keep my breathing even, but I could feel Vufril trembling at my side, and his fright stirred my own. Where was Mama's voice? Or Papa's steps? Someone who should check on the noise? We heard nothing. I glanced toward our closed bedroom door. Even though I heard no footsteps, I did see a faint light wander back and forth under the door. I tucked my feet into my nightgown. It suddenly seemed very cold. After a long silence, I finally loosened my knot of legs and swung them over the side of the bed. Perhaps Mama or Papa had tripped over something and needed help. I couldn't hear their voices, though. Vufril stared at me.
"Are you going out there?"
he whispered. I turned my eyes back toward our bedroom entrance. Lights still reflected from its bottom slit, hovering. It did not look like candlelight or the light of a fireplace, or sunlight. I motioned for Vufril to stay in bed, then crept over and peered out into the living room. There, on the other side of our door, drifted a world of fireflies. It did not occur to me that I might be dreaming. The air seemed too alive. The fireflies were everywhere, too bright to be an illusion. I'd never seen so many, certainly none in the winter. They clustered the most brightly near the music room. One flew so close to my face that I stepped back and blinked, afraid it would land on me. But perhaps they were not fireflies at all. For in that moment, I glimpsed a tiny figure behind the light and caught sight of slender arms, legs as fine and delicate as flower stems. It made a bell-like sound before darting away. I wandered out of our room, awed into silence. Moonlight spilled through the windows to paint patterns on the floor. Outside, I could see the dark outlines of the Geitrudegasse's buildings asleep under the stars. The tiny creature's glow gave our flat a strange color, somewhere between this world and another. I wanted to say it looked yellow or blue, but I could not. It was like describing the color of glass. The shadows stirred near the music room's door. I turned toward it. My feet moved forward on their own, and my brother followed close behind. The dots of light drifted aside for us, letting us carve a dark blue trail through their golden mist. Someone was humming near our clavier. When I saw him, I gasped and lifted a hand to point in his direction. The boy swiveled to face us. He flashed me a smile that revealed pearl-white canines. He was taller than I, his frame as young and willowy as a dancer at the ballet. His skin glinted pale in the moonlight, and his fingers were long and lithe, his nails sharp. Sapphire hair tumbled, shining down his back, and among the strands hung twisted trails of black ivy, shimmers of moss and forest, night and jewels. His eyes were large, luminous, and wondrously blue. They glowed in the darkness and lit up his lashes. His lips were full and amused. When I looked closer, I noticed the cat-like slant of his pupils. His cheekbones were high and elegant in his youthful face, and he looked so unbearably beautiful that I blushed at the sight of him. Of all my memories, this first meeting remains the sharpest. "Who are you?" I asked. Beside me, Vulfril's eyes were round with awe.
"Are you the guardian from the forest?" he added.
The boy, the creature, tilted his head at me.
"You don't know,"
he replied. There was a wildness about his voice, like wind that made the leaves dance, and I recognized it immediately as the sound I had yearned toward in my dream.
"This is who whispered to me at the clavier, the same boy I'd seen walking beside the ocean in my dream."
It was him, and he was here. The breath in my chest tightened in fear and excitement. Was he an imp, as Wulfril had first suggested? I'd seen black and white ink drawings of those gnarled little creatures in collections of fairy tales, legends, and myths, but this beautiful boy bore hardly any resemblance to them. It was as if he were the original mold, and the drawings merely his crooked shadows. When I said nothing, he smiled and beckoned to me. Several of the fireflies danced close to him now, tugging affectionately at his hair and kissing his cheeks. He brushed them away and they scattered, only to return to hover around him.
"You are the Mozart girl," he answered. "Maria Anna."
"Yes," I whispered back. "But I'm called Nannerl for short."
"Little Nannerl," he said, his grin tilting playfully up at one side. "Of course."
The way he said my name sent a shiver down my spine. He turned to look at the clavier, and the gesture set the jewels in his hair clinking.
"The girl with the glass pendant. I heard your wish."
How could he have heard something I only held in my heart? A wave of fear rose in me that he might say it aloud. "You were the one in my dream," I replied.
"Was it your dream, Nannerl?"
His fanged smile gleamed in the darkness.
"Or are you in mine?"
The lights hovering about his face twinkled. "Hyacinth," they cried at him with their tiny bell voices, and he cocked his head at their calls.
"Go back to bed," he said.
"We will talk again soon." Then he reached out to the clavier's music stand, grabbed my notebook, and tucked it under his arm. Wulfril cried out before I did, his baby hands stretching out toward the boy.
"He's stealing your notebook!"
The boy shot me one last glance.
"There is a trinket shop at the end of the Geitridgasse," he said. "Come tomorrow and I will return your music to you."
He didn't wait for me to reply. Instead, he turned his back to us and threw himself at the window. My cry choked in my throat. The glass shattered, and the boy blended in with a thousand glittering shards that spilled from the frame. His figure vanished as he fell to the street below. Wulfril and I both darted to the windowsill. There, the scene made me step back in shock. The Geitridgasse, its shops and carriages and silent iron posts, had disappeared. In its place lay a forest thick with upside-down trees, their roots reaching up to the stars, their leaves spreading out on the ground like velvet pools. Twin moons washed the scene into ivory and blue. A faint hum lingered on the night breeze, that same perfect, enticing melody from my dream, whispering for us to come closer. A trodden path wound its way from our building far into the forest's belly, deep into somewhere we could no longer see, where it faded away into the darkness. A crooked wooden signpost stood right at the forest's entrance, pointing to the path. I squinted to read what it said, but couldn't make out the letters. The music hanging in the air made my hands tremble, and a sudden urge surged in me. I tugged on Wulfril's hand. "Let's follow him," I whispered. Wulfril obeyed without hesitation. Our feet took flight. I unlocked our flat's front door, swung it open, and hurried out with my brother. My nightgown hugged my thighs as I ran, and the winter floors numbed my bare feet. I ran down the stairs and past the archways, down the third and second stories, down, down, all the way down, until I stumbled to a halt at the arched entrance leading to the main street. I blinked. The forest, the moons, the upside-down trees, the trodden path, the sign, the music. They were gone. The Geitridgasse had returned to normal. The bakery, and winery, and the pubs,
their wrought iron signs dangling quietly over their doors, shutters closed and flags pointed up toward the sky. In the distance loomed the familiar black silhouette of Hohensalzburg Fortress, below which curved the silver ribbon of the Salzach River. I simply stood there, trembling from the cold, clutching the edge of my gown, starving to hear more of the melody from that other world. Wufferl came panting behind me. I caught him right as he ran toward the street and pressed him close to my side. He looked as surprised as I did.
"Where did he go?" he asked.
His breath rose in cloudy wisps. A sick feeling crept into my stomach. I did not look forward to seeing Papa's face when he found out that the notebook had gone missing. He would think I'd lost it and shake his head in disappointment. Beside me, my brother noticed my crestfallen expression and sobered immediately, slumping his shoulders and lowering his eyes.
"Wufferl! Nanril!"
The familiar voice startled me. Both of us whirled around in unison. It was Mama, her hair tucked underneath a nightcap, racing down the steps toward us. Her hands clutched at her coat. The image of our mother looked so real, the lines of her face so defined in contrast to the halo of light that had surrounded the boy. Suddenly, I felt how solid the ground was beneath my feet, how biting the chill was in the air. She frowned at me. "I am afraid of the cold," Mama had told me before, and I turned my eyes down in shame for forcing her out here on an autumn night.
"Nanril, what in the world are you both doing down here?"
She shivered, her breath rising in a cloud.
"Have you lost your senses?"
I started to explain what we had seen, but when I pointed up to where our windows were, where the boy had thrown himself down to the streets, I saw that the glass panes had returned to their normal state. Nothing was broken. My words died on my lips. Even Wolfril stayed quiet.
"I'm sorry, Mama," I finally said. "We were dreaming."
Our mother looked from me to my brother, then back again. The hint of a smile danced on her lips before it disappeared again behind her frown. There was a question in her eyes, something curious beyond her stern gaze that wondered what could really have brought us out here. After a pause, Mama shook her head and held out a hand to each of us. We took them, and she began to lead us back up the stairs. "The very idea," she murmured, frowning at how cold our hands felt in her warm ones.
"I'd not thought you capable of such mischief, Nanril. Rushing out here with your brother in the darkest hour of night and in this cold? Thank goodness your father sleeps so heavily, otherwise he'd never let you hear the end of this."
I looked up at her.
"Didn't you hear the crash in the music room, Mama?"
I asked. Our mother raised a slender eyebrow. "Nothing of the sort." I fell silent again. As we stepped back inside our building, I saw the trinket shop at the end of the Geiteldegasse from the corner of my eye. The boy's final words lingered. I wondered what would happen if I met him there. When I looked at Wulfril, he looked ready to say something to Mama, but after a while, his mouth relaxed into a line, and he turned his face down. The matter was dropped.